So I'm going to be ani daber ba anglit. If anybody im yesh baya, mishu yesh baya, tagid. So the title of the talk is From Mindfulness to Dharma. And some of you already said, well, mindfulness is Dharma. And for others, it may be, well, what is Dharma, actually? And I'm a mindfulness teacher. And I can't call myself a Dharma teacher. And the two are really different, and there's a lot of room for confusion and uncertainty about it all. And so I really feel it's time to try and develop an understanding of the not just in the language, but in the way these words are used, the meaning, and the way we can work with both of them. I just want to start with a very radical statement, okay? Which those of you understand it. Those of you who don't understand it, leave it as a big question. The Dharma is the truth of things. Therefore, the Dharma is, in a sense, ultimate. Mashu ultimativi nizgav. Mashu. And we, in our practice, and we're teaching it, bringing down the truth into the world of illusion. The world of illusion is the world of what we call ordinary reality, called getting up in the morning, going to work, doing this, thinking this, this is a tree, this is a Stephen, this is illusion. And the Dharma is cutting through the illusion. And in that sense, mindfulness is work inside illusion, inside Olam Kozev. So it's a radical place, but we are, in a way, trying to bring the Dharma down into this world. And bring ourselves up to it and others. So that's, I'm starting with that place. When we use the word mindfulness, there is a tendency to make it very small. It's just a technique. It's called MBSR. I learned MBSR. It's a way of teaching something that is helpful to people. Doesn't help me so much to have the big Buddhist context around it. And surely what the Buddha taught is watching the breath. That would be a minimal view of mindfulness and a minimal view of the Buddha as well. Sometimes in my journey bringing out to really thousands of people the Dharma, but when I talk about mindfulness sometimes people come to me and say, "Ah, mindfulness is very good. It's not meditation, is it?" As long as it's not meditation. I think it's quite funny. But there's another distortion to maximize mindfulness and make mindfulness the whole of the Buddhist path and the whole of what the Buddha taught, saying, no, he taught a very big thing. We call it all mindfulness. And I've a long time argued with Yaakov Raz about this. So both of us have a great argument. But it's not only Yaakov Raz. I received this just recently from Kabat-Zinn, and I'm in dialogue with him, and he wrote some very lovely things about my new book, which is the Erut B'Chaye Yom Yom, is coming out in English. And so he wrote some nice words to put on the book. And I'll just read to you what he wrote, because it starts off with, "The way I use the word mindfulness, there is nothing beyond it. Because it is shorthand," is a short description, "for deeply embodied wisdom and its myriad expressions in life." I'll just go on with what he said about my book, because why not?
you said I, when I...
John Kabat-Zinn.
It's John, yeah.
I said, no, I said he wrote this. In this deeply nurturing and illuminating book, Stephen Fulda unfolds the universe that gave birth to the most refined articulation of mindfulness on the planet, and how it can be understood and nurtured, both from the more traditional Buddhist perspective and from a more universal perspective for the benefit of all. Stephen's life trajectory and choices are an embodiment of his fierce love, which I like that, his fierce love of what is most sacred, but what is most easily missed. Nice language there. And so, yes, mindfulness is a method, technique, and practice. It is in the world of practice. And the Buddha talks about it as practice. He didn't talk about it as liberation. It is opening doors, it is shining the light on things, it is a way of applying the mind and the powers that a human being has for the sake of wisdom and liberation. But it is itself a practice. And it opens us to beyond mindfulness, of course. It opens doors. The Buddha was very specific how he used mindfulness. Mindfulness, sati, and you can say it's shining the light on our genuine experience and remembering to be awake and aware. And like I said, I prefer the word erut in Hebrew. I think it's more true to the word to sati. Shining the light, opening, looking, seeing into what is happening, rather than being in the tayas automati, automatic pilot. It leads us, as a practice, to a different way of looking at life. And that's not sati. It's the fruit of sati. And you can see it in the Eightfold Path very clearly, because mindfulness is only one of the Eightfold Path. And what's the key to the Eightfold Path? Right view. And what's right view? A radical different way of looking at reality. A different way, unfiltered, you could say, looking at reality from a perspective which is much bigger than the limited human perspective of our interests and our needs and our preferences and our conditionings and our subjective filter of our subjective world, the filter. It's, as I say, unfiltered. It's a much bigger view, which is a view into being, us and the world, the totality of things. And mindfulness is one step along with, we could say, right speech. In the Eightfold Path, right speech is one of the eight. So mindfulness, it doesn't say mindfulness is the only one and the rest are less. It says mindfulness is one of the eight. And as the fourth of the Four Noble Truths, it is the path. So it does put it in perspective in the Buddhist tradition, which is the source of our teaching. And I'm going to go into this now in more detail, but one example I think that might make it clearer. Imagine meditation and our spiritual practice and our spiritual life is a bit like learning a musical instrument. So the first thing we do when we learn a musical instrument is we have to learn the instrument. And that's like mindfulness. We learn mindfulness, we go to a MBSR course, we learn something that we need to do with our mind. It's not that we never did it, We were mindful to some extent without talking about it, especially as a child, we were quite mindful. But it's development of a quality or of a power of a practice. Like we learn the instrument. Then we find the next stage, we are actually no longer practicing with the instrument, we are playing music. And we play different kinds of music. And we suddenly, we have already learnt mindfulness, now we are, in a way beyond mindfulness, we are applying it to life. And so, like we learn, we play music then, Spanish, Indian, Western, jazz, any possibilities, we learnt the instrument, we now apply it to life. This is already beyond mindfulness itself as learning the instrument. It is, shall we say, an example would be when we're angry, when we're happy, when we're sad, when we're sick, when we're old, when we're young, when we're working, when we're resting. These are like the different music that we play the instrument of mindfulness in life. So it's already beyond mindfulness. It's the playing the music. And it goes all the way to the spiritual universal, which would be, I suppose, you know, tedere universale, the music of the whole of being, the music of the totality, the music of the stars. It goes there. Also, of course, way beyond mindfulness. But without mindfulness, we would never learn to play the instrument and listen to the music of the stars. So this maybe is an example of how mindfulness takes us beyond itself. So I want to be very specific to the Buddhist teaching in order to kind of really illustrate this. So the basic text, and you all know this, that is guiding the whole mindfulness movement is the Satipatthana Sutta, the four bases of mindfulness, or the foundations of mindfulness, you could call it, the frames, that sometimes called the frames of reference of mindfulness. And Satipatthana Sutta really shows us the difference between mindfulness and Dharma and the way they're related and intimate but different. So in the Satipatthana Sutta, the first three bases or foundations of mindfulness are addresses. Where we address, what's the katovet, where we address mindfulness. The first is the body. The second is the life of our interests, liking, not liking, pleasant, unpleasant, vedana. The third is mind, heart, citta. These are the places where what we do when we sit down and practice mindfulness, or you, or people you teach, mostly body, but also mind, and also feeling life, and like the sutta says, also inside and also outside. We're not just in, it's also being in the world, connecting with the sky above and the sound of the dogs barking. So the first three are very clearly mindfulness practice that we recognize, and we can give it a, you know, clarity. This is mindfulness. Yes, I know that. The fourth is called Dharma, as an address, is four foundations, or as a foundation of mindfulness. Dharma, foundation of mindfulness. So it's kaya, vedana, citta, and dharma. Dharma is the fourth foundation of mindfulness in the Satipatthana Sutta. And there, if you read it, you will find all the key teachings of the Buddha. You will find there the Four Noble Truths. You will find there the senses, the world of the six senses, as the teaching of the six senses. You'll find there the aggregates, which is the nature of a moment of experience, how we build an experience. It's kind of the neurology of the Buddha, the neurologia, how an experience is made up, what it's made of. You'll find there the hindrances, and you'll find there the factors of awakening. Seven factors of awakening. And the first thing to notice is, because the whole text is mind, is basis of mindfulness, we are asked to be mindful of these teachings, that these teachings become our mindfulness. And these teachings in the fourth foundation of mind, it's not three foundations of mindfulness and one more of philosophy. That you do three foundations of mindfulness and you go to a course of mindfulness and you learn body, mind, heart, and so on. And the fourth foundation is Buddhist teaching, which is all, you need the text and its philosophy and its thinking and its concepts. No. The text says you have to be mindful of the teachings of the Buddha. Bring them into mindfulness as the equivalent to the body. And that's really making a big jump, because we sit here, and most of you have learned about, all of you have learned about the Four Noble Truths. Okay? But the Dharma is the Four Noble Truths, the wisdom and the insight and the teachings of the Buddha. But how do you be mindful of the Four Noble Truths? Mindfulness is the present moment. Mindfulness is not thinking about. Mindfulness is not philosophy. Mindfulness is not analysis. Mindfulness is knowing, is shining the light. Okay? How are you going to shine the light in this moment, not in the future and not in the past, on the Four Noble Truths as an experience in this moment? That takes the thing in a totally different direction, right? How are you to work with teachings as mindfulness of the teachings in the moment of my experience right now? All the teachings of the Buddha in this moment. That's Dharma. That's Dharma. That's living the teachings rather than practicing mindfulness. Because Dharma, the word Dharma, I didn't translate it, but because mostly I try and run away from translating it. Explaining the word, I try and escape from that. Because it's one of these words like, I don't know, gravitatia, you know, gravitation. I don't know, it's very difficult to translate. But it means it's both the path and the truth of things that are realized on the path. So it's together. There's not a path and a fruit of the path. Dharma means the truth of things as they are seen through the eyes of a practitioner. It's not just ultimate truth, that there's no Dharma until you're already enlightened. It's the truth of things deeper than the olam kozev, that I say, the illusion. It's the non-illusion. So here we are in a place which, in a way, when it's no longer path, because mindfulness is no longer a technique. It's where the teachings become our life, and we're mindful of the teachings all the time, and then they become Dharma, rather than a technique called mindfulness, in which have an address called the body or the feelings or the thought. We're mindfulness of the teachings. The teachings are our total life. Four Noble Truths is our life. The way that our senses are our life. It's reality. So it's mindfulness of reality. And then it takes us into a place which is really no path anymore. And I have to say that The whole purpose of the path in the Buddhist teaching is to get off it. That's the whole purpose of a path, is to get off the path. Who wants to be on a path all the time? We want it. Liberation is getting off it, not staying on it, schlepping along all our life. So, I'll give an example now. Take the hindrances. So you all know the hindrances. In non-dharma, shall we say, mindfulness-specific as technique, sati, then it is the experience of hindrances that arise and the body, kaya, liking, not liking, pleasant, unpleasant, citta. So we define them as problems that arise in meditation, that we experience agitation, tiredness. I bet you half of all your students will report tiredness most of the time, or a lot of the time, as being what arises when they do mindfulness. And so it's arising as a phenomena in the mind-body field that you apply mindfulness to, and then you learn wise ways in the mindfulness tradition of working with these phenomena that are arising in the present as problems, kilu, or issues that cause suffering in the present. Tiredness, agitation, restlessness, wanting to escape, resistance, tsunami of thinking, all the lot, yeah, arising. And you learn wise ways, being mindful, non-identifying, recognizing, exploring, seeing, investigating, doing vipassana. So that would be in the non-dharma, it would be in the mindfulness place. Using these techniques in order to work with symptoms that arise and give us problems as we practice mindfulness. But in the dharma place, hindrances as the dharma, which is the fourth foundation, they're something very different, the hindrances. There we begin to understand the hindrances as the expressions of samsara. Their hindrances are dharma. They are dharma. They are not a problem. They are dharma. That means the truth of things and the deeper truth of things. So, we understand deeply the hindrances and see them, not just understanding philosophically, understanding our agitation, for example, isheket, that we're sitting peacefully, quietly, doing nothing, minding our own business, and isheket arises. Where does that come from? Oh, samsara. In other words, conditioning. In other words, what's being built into the system. Chikuch, friction between the self and the world, creating agitation, restlessness, struggle. So we understand the hindrances is coming from that place of conditioned reality, that we are conditioned beings struggling in life, namely samsara. That's where they're coming from. So we understand something about us, we understand something about samsara, and the way we relate to them is we see them directly as an invitation to purify the taher, the conditioned mind, and experience freedom. So we are welcoming the hindrances as a invitation or as a teacher to show us the expression of samsara and invite us, there you need to go in order to purify, in order to develop develop freedom. So there, hindrances become a treasure, not a problem. It's a completely different attitude. They become something precious. And we sort of love them in a way. They're the voices of samsara that tell me where I need to go and tell me where I need to practice and tell me. And my response to that is being totally mindful of the, not only the experience of agitation, but also the hindrances, what they're saying, the truth of them, the dharma of the hindrances. And going further, seeing them in daily life. There they become our daily life teachers. So moment of restlessness, very subtle. Moment, an opposite of them, the moment of non-restlessness. The moment where restlessness disappears. And it can be very subtle, just a little feeling of restlessness when we're walking down the street, going to wherever, Tel Aviv. And all of a sudden the restlessness, agitation, all of a sudden resistance, all of a sudden confusion. And it's because when we look at our daily life, these places will be the places where samsara or the conditioned reality will show us its face. And therefore it's dharma. It's a truth of things, it's a deeper truth of things. And therefore we are, okay, I see. I'm intimate with these voices of samsara, I need to know them. Thank you for appearing and showing me your face of the conditioned world. Aolam shalhat naya. So it's a whole different attitude. It's treating them as Buddhist teaching, not as an uncomfortable symptom that I have to deal with in sitting down for half an hour. Let's take another example, Four Noble Truths. They are there in the fourth foundation of mindfulness as dharma. How do you experience the Four Noble Truths? Experiencing the dharma of the Four Noble Truths in the moment. So we just think about it. I mean, I could say, when I lift this cup, very subtly, I felt dry. My mouth felt dry. Moment of dukkha, leading to or understanding that there was an attachment there or a need to walk for water, and I moved to get water, and then after the water there was end of the need and end of the dukkha and a moment of peace until the next shluk and the whole cycle. And then there was something to be done with it, something to be experienced with this experience. So we move our body when we are sitting. And if we really look at in that moment of moving our body, we see the whole Four Noble Truths. Moment of slight discomfort, slight need for something, seeing it as attachment, the second Noble Truth, attachment to being more comfortable. That means attachment gives it its power to do something with it. So you move your body and then you feel quiet and okay. And it's a third Noble Truth in a very small. And the fourth Noble Truth, the practice with it, the understanding with it, the whole thing as knowing, as a part of the journey. It's not just a totally unimportant thing. So in the moment and all the time when we're in our daily life, we can feel the Four Noble Truths working. Moment of attachment, a moment of need, a moment of suffering, even very delicately, thoughts that give us a problem, situation that gives us a problem, feel, and then what, not just, oh, I've got a problem. It's the whole journey that this thought that we don't like, what's the journey that happens with that? 24 hours, it's like, that's what's happening to us. We may not see big dukkha, and I hope we don't. But small dukkha is 24 hours. If you think about it, for example, I don't know, sort of millions of examples, but a to-do list in the mind, to-do list, thoughts of mani surklasot, her to-do list. We could see that as dukkha, contracted, mitkavetz, attachment to self, attachment to insecurity, if I don't think this, then I might not be able to. Im az, if I don't have this to-do list, there will be a problem. Im az, if then. And it's instead of thoughts or consciousness which is free and liberated. So it's a contraction, it's a mitkavet inside the consciousness, this to-do list, instead of a liberated consciousness, which is present, open and infinite. So already in the to-do list there's a lot of happening of dukkha, attachment, history, and what is not there and what could be there, and the whole Four Noble Truths, if we look at it, we can see in this moment of one thought of a to-do list. And when the to-do list thought is finished, space. Third Noble Truth, space. Gone. So we need to get close to our experience, and then we will begin to see our experience in the light of the Four Noble Truths, and then we are seeing Dharma. We are, instead of mindfulness of body, it's mindfulness of the Four Noble Truths. We are knowing dukkha, we are knowing liberation, we are knowing the relationship between one and the other. We are knowing when dukkha, when attachment is dropped. We are knowing it's living with the Four Noble Truths moment by moment. And then it becomes Dharma. And, you know, obviously I can go on to all of them, but I do want to go into the seven factors of awakening, which are to me really, really important as Dharma. And we often forget that what is taking us, the carriage, the vehicle that takes us to awakening, are the qualities that we develop. They're not experiences, they are qualities. Experiences don't take us to awakening, but qualities do. Echuyot. So, for example, we sat before for 30 minutes. I gave some instructions, and they were probably not the usual ones you were getting usually. What's relevant and important as factors of awakening, as qualities, is what did you learn when you got up from the meditation? What stayed with you after the meditation? That's called the qualities that are built inside us, and there is the Dharma. Not what experiences I had, a good meditation, not good, better, not better, but what was stayed when you got up? And what did you learn? And it's a good question to ask, by the way. It's a really, really good question to ask yourselves and your students. What did you learn from this?
bit some more.
Jakob, do you mind to give me a refill? Thanks.
Yeah, you want to?
And we could ask the question to ourselves, what drives awakening? What are the engines, what is the vehicle that drives awakening? What is it? What is, and another way of looking at it, we have a stream of consciousness, Zerema Toda'a. That's building us. That's what we think all day. That's who we are, our stream of consciousness, Zerema Toda'a. Stream of consciousness tells us the world, tells us what we do, tells us who we are, tells us what's the content in the mind, tochen, of our life, actually. But what's it made of? And how is it changed by our practice? And here we are in that dharma of qualities, factors of awakening. So I'll just mention a few of the factors. You probably know them all. You may know them. Thanks. But the first is mindfulness. So here we have a circle. The Satipatthana Sutta is the four bases of mindfulness. So if 7 factors of awakening or the mindfulness is the first of them, then it's mindfulness of mindfulness. And mindfulness of mindfulness is turning mindfulness itself into one of the qualities of our life. And it's a little bit like I said before, when when we're first learning a musical instrument, we are learning mindfulness, MBSR. But when we're playing the musical instrument in all situations in life, we're no longer learning a musical instrument anymore, we're just playing music. And we play music under the tree, and we play music, different music here and different music there, and we know the music that we're playing. So we are mindful of mindfulness. How mindful are we? Now I'm more, now I'm less, now it's this, now it's music is lovely, now music is difficult and problematic. So the ups and downs of mindfulness in our daily life, and the way we know that, and the way we engage with the levels of mindfulness in our life, is being mindful of mindfulness, or it's turning mindfulness into dharma. It's turning it from a technique into a whole lived, it becomes us, it becomes the truth of things. How is the mindfulness changing in my daily life, more or less, all the time? Mindful of mindfulness, being aware of mindfulness. Being the second investigation, being aware of going deeper. Investigation or chakira, exploring what's the nature of this moment, what is happening right now. What is the nature of this experience? What is really happening? What is not illusion? Malum pashlaya or avidya, non-wisdom. And I'm not going to spend time on all of them, but just briefly, third is energy. Purifying the energy of our life. What's the energy? With what energy do we walk, talk, think? Energy of conflict, energy of peace, good energy, balanced energy, pushing energy, restless energy, deep quiet energy, all energy, forms of energy, balanced energy, fine, subtle energy. What about the energy body? The body is made of energy. Do we know that? It's not physical body, it's energy body. So it's really engaging with the energy world, and states of energy, and seeing how pure or refined, adin, our energy states are. Joy, rapture, well-being, happiness, vehicle that takes us to awakening. How is it for us? Engaging with it, in the flow of happiness, moment by moment. How is it now? How is it now? How is it now? How is it now? That is being mindful of Dharma. That is being in the world of Dharma. Quiet, tranquility is the fourth one, fifth one. Deep peace, stillness. Never mind where, you could be walking along middle of Dizengoff and deeply peaceful, completely peaceful and deep quiet, or totally agitated and restless and I had a really difficult experience last week. I went to I picked up my granddaughter, and she needed to go shopping in Arena, the Canyon. And I was sick, a bit of a fever, but I went anyway and took her. And then I had to stay in the Canyon because she didn't have the money, so I had to stay there. And she was ages and ages, like an hour and a half. I was sitting in the Canyon on a bench for an hour and a half, shaking because I had fever. And it was freezing. That's why I was shaking. It was so cold with the air conditioning. And I felt I was in the bottom of the hell. This is what civilization... And I started to build, great concepts about civilization. This is the end of civilization. This is what the whole of life is about. It's all this. This is it. It's the bottom. I remember how kind of... and then Dharma, I reflected on the factors of awakening, how... I was so unpeaceful and unloving and unjoyful at that moment. It just was like that. And it doesn't mean we have, all these factors, by the way, and it doesn't mean you have to be joyful all the time. It's not saying Dharma is only if you're joyful. That's not the... It's Dharma is if you are engaging with your joy and the levels of it and the ups and downs of it, and it's a dialogue with it, and you're mindful of your joy. But it doesn't mean you have to be all 100% joyful. That's not Dharma. 100% perfect is not Dharma, it's just obsession. Samadhi is the sixth. Meditative concentration, stopping, ability to stop, ability to focus, ability to stay with things, ability to be steady. Or not, it's sometimes yes, sometimes more or less, but you're engaged with it, that's your music. It's one of the vehicles that take you there. Your engagement with samadhi will bring you to deeper and deeper places. And the final one, equanimity, is of course very powerful. Is your steadiness, your ability to receive the change of circumstances in life and dance with the change. And how is that with you? How equanimous are you at each moment? Even now, when I'm talking, how equanimous are all of you here? How do you feel? More vulnerable, less vulnerable? Disturbed or not disturbed in any way. So I won't go into any more than that. They're all very important. The aggregates are hugely important. But I won't go into them. This is such another big subject. Dharma is about the truth of things and is the path to liberation. There isn't an abstract Dharma. Dharma is always about what is liberating for us. It's seeing, there isn't a difference. Dharma is not an ontological or abstract high teaching which is just something to be to learned. That's why mindfulness of Dharma is telling us that. We need to be engaged with it in the moment. It's a lived experience, so there's no difference between the person and the teaching. The person is the teaching. We are the Dharma. It's not that we need to learn Dharma. We are the Dharma. The Dharma and us are not different. So the truth is a process. We are liberated into this truth instead of wanting it, instead of asking for it, instead of studying it, instead of dreaming about it. So because of that, because the Dharma is about a totally different view of reality, of us and the world, in the end, there's really only one way. And that is to let it take us over. In the end, the only one way to have be mindfulness of the Dharma, which is surrender, which is just surrender, and let the Dharma take us. The truth of things take us. Instead of hunting for the truth of things and trying, and we're still in the world of path and practice. To get beyond the world of path and practice, we just have to set, you know, let it take us. Let the Dharma, just live the Dharma and let it just dominate our whole existence. And then it becomes part of ourselves, our ta'im, our whole being, our mind, body. We are living the Dharma. And that's the Dharma. The Dharma is to be lived. It's not a thing to be studied. It's not a thing. And it's the difference between mind. It's not a practice. It's something total to be lived. And we become it. And that's why it's different from mindfulness as technique or practice. Because in the end, there's nowhere else to be. Then there isn't anything else in the way except Dharma. There's nowhere else we can be. We can be sort of flopping about in the world of the illusions, but there's nowhere else except Dharma, really. So thank you. Can you... Okay.